councillors, members of the public. Welcome to this meeting of Exmouth Town Council, held in Holy Trinity Church on Monday the 12th of June, 7 o'clock. With your agreement, councillors, I should like to take item 9 of the agenda first, as I'd like to invite Inspector Antonia Weeks to address us, and she needs to get away for operational reasons. So I propose to have that first of all, and then we will go back into council.
Agreed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Antonio, the floor is yours.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you very much for having me along to your meeting. It has been a while, actually, since I last attended, so it's not been with you. So it's nice to see you all. Just to give you a bit of an update, really. There's not been a huge amount of change for us as far as you're concerned at Exmouth Police Station. We still have the officers working out of there, 24/7 response, CID and neighbourhood. And actually, in fact, contrary to popular opinion within the town, the station is not shut and is actually busier than ever. We've recently accommodated a national working party at Exmouth, which is looking primarily at modern slavery. So that's put Exmouth on the map nationally in that arena of policing, which is really good. Not for any other reason than our Chief Constable is the national lead on that, and he was the host, if you like, for that project. Please rest assured there's no major issue with modern slavery in this area over and above the rest of the country, so it's purely for those sort of domestic reasons, if you like. As regards crime, and I cover the wider Exmouth area and out into the Ottery St Mary area as well, the reported crime figures that you'll be seeing from here on in will look higher, will look to have increased, certainly in percentage terms, albeit the underlying figures are still relatively low. That is mainly due to our recording practices, and you may well have seen some reports in the press earlier this year about our HMIC inspection, about our crime data recording practices. And it's fair to say that we needed to up our game a little bit, and that's mainly in relation to sort of accounting purposes, if you like, and the accuracy of what we record. The upshot of that is it looks like crime has increased. I'm pretty confident, using the other measures that I do, that there is no more criminality or commission of crime. It's just we're better at capturing it, we're better at recording it, and we're better at people getting people to tell us about it, which is, after all, what we want. Our main areas of focus are around the most vulnerable members of our society, in particular young people. So that is one of the key focuses of our activity, looking at exploitation of young people, people missing from care, people putting themselves at risk, both physically and sort of on the internet that you'll hear a lot about, so online safety and all those issues. And that crosses over into other areas of vulnerability around domestic abuse, abuse within the home, sexual abuse, and other exploitation of people, not just children, but vulnerable adults as well. I think you'll agree with me that Exmouth is probably no different to other similar areas in the country, but does have a fair challenge around mental health issues in the community. And we're continuing to work alongside other agencies in supporting people with mental health issues in the community and the vulnerability that they have, and also what they get involved in, which unfortunately can end up in criminal offences, either as a federal victim, and looking at putting the sort of protective measures around them to reduce their vulnerability. So that's an ongoing issue for us, especially as other public services contract as well, and with being a 24/7 service, often we're the service of first and last resort across that. As regards our staffing, we have over the last 6 to 12 months been quite challenged on police resources across my area for various reasons, some of those financial, some of those due to just the life cycle of staff around absence, maternity and so on. But we are going to see another increase in resources towards the end of this year. Join me here at Exmouth. May not sound like a lot, but actually it is a pretty good increase for us, and that'll give me a little bit more capacity to deliver on some of the other areas that maybe over the last sort of year we've had to not give the same attention to that we'd like to consistently moving forward. So that's the good news. So I probably want to leave it there on a high note if I can, and open it up for any questions, for anything that I haven't covered. That's very, very quick sort of update for you, but I know that you all have issues, and I'll address it as you do.
Right, thank you. Mark?
Antonio, can you remind us what the situation is of the PCSOs in Exmouth? Because we have Islington, which is the largest ward in Exmouth, and I understood today we're actually the largest district ward in the whole of Devon. We have a monthly meeting of ward councillors, and about every 3 months we used to invite Kevin McLeod to come and join with us, and other wards may be, and those were very useful meetings. I just wondered what the situation was over their availability, and also over all their numbers.
Okay, so Devon and Cornwall Police have 360 PCSOs across the force area, and I think it was before Christmas our Police and Crime Commissioner, earlier this year, made the announcement along with the Chief Constable that as part of the force-wide workforce modernisation review, we were having to look at balance the number of police officers we have with the number of PCSOs we have, and the direction of travel at that moment was to look at increasing police numbers, which would mean ultimately a reduction in PCSO numbers, possibly a halving. Now I'm led to believe that they will not be redundancies, and that we will look to reduce the number of PCSOs over a period of probably 4 years, finances allowing. However, I have no more detail on that at this moment in time. Where we are locally, so I have 8 full-time equivalent PCSOs across the my sector, which is Exmouth and Ottery, and you have seen a small reduction in PCSO numbers in Exmouth, mainly due to natural wasting, as you call it. So if a PCSO leaves the organisation now, they won't be replaced at this moment in time. So we are looking at how we can sort of absorb that loss, if you like, and still deliver a service to you in your locality. But can you just remind me what ward?
This is Littleham.
In Littleham, yeah. So you have a full-time PCSO.
We have, yes.
No, Kevin McLeod is still the Littleham PCSO. But it's fair to say that where we have reduced numbers of PCSOs in any area, those PCSOs have increased their area, if you like. So Kev is predominantly the Littleham PCSO, but will also cover other areas as and when the need arises. So the concentration, if you like, is reduced a little bit.
Thank you very much. So it's still a bit.
Yeah.
Brian Bailey, please.
Thank you. Good evening. Thanks for coming. One question with three parts, if that's all right. The first one is, I've recently retired as a full-time taxi driver for nearly 20 years in Exmouth, just doing nights. And my former colleagues tell me there is a lack of police on Friday and Saturday night in Exmouth, compared to what there was a few years ago. When I was doing it full-time, there was always adequate numbers, and they don't appear to me now. Have you any comment on that, please?
Well, it depends what you mean by lack of or adequate, but we have less police officers than we did have. I don't know how many years we're talking, but we do have less police officers than we had probably 5 and 10 years ago. Friday and Saturday night, our shifts are doubled up, if you like. So between the hours of 9 in the evening and 3 in the morning, we have two shifts on duty. So in essence, we have twice as many police officers on duty during that time than we do during the day, if you like. But they are not necessarily dedicated and tasked to being on patrol in the town centre. They may well have other priorities, incidents, calls for service that they need to attend. The default position on during those times is if they are undeployed or not directly attending an incident or dealing with something else, that they default to the town centre. Obviously, that is dependent on the demand at any one time.
Right, thank you. The other point is, which I've been banging my head for years, is the lack of a custody centre in Exmouth. I know the cells exist, but they're very rarely used. And the reason I'm so passionate about this is because when you, sooner or later, you're going to arrest someone, they're going to go to Exeter, which is your first port of call. Now, if it's 2 o'clock in the morning, Exeter could well be full on a busy weekend. And then they have to go all the way to Launceston. So that's depleting the number of active officers and putting the rest of them under a great strain. So would you be keen to try and reopen, even if it's at weekends, the custody centre for the two cells, which make
no,
quite a lot
the cells at Exmouth have been decommissioned. Custody provision is more than just having cells there. It's obviously got to staff it. It's got to be service maintained. It's got to be safe. Custody is a really specialised provision of ours, and it's massively expensive. So for economies of scale, we've hubbed our custody centres into strategic points. So our nearest one is Heavytree Road. Launceston's closed. That closed probably about a year ago. So our second custody centre, if you like, is Torbay, which obviously with the new link road is not quite as far away as maybe it once was. And there's another one in Barnstable, sort of for us. Exeter has a pretty decent capacity, so it's really full. But you're right, when we arrest someone, we do have to take them to Exeter, and that is two police officers doing that at any one time. However, it's not feasible at this stage to reopen smaller, unsustainable custody centres. And we are, as part of our estate strategy, you may have heard, looking at rebuilding, if you like, in Heavytree Road Police Station in the same, pretty much, location as Middlemore headquarters. And that will dramatically increase access to the east of the region, including us, for that provision. So that's going to be happening in the next probably 18 months to 2 years. And that actually is going to reduce quite a lot of the commitment of time in taking people to custody, so you haven't got to drive all the way into the city. It's still not here, I get that, but it's an improvement, and it will be a vastly improved, modern, future-proof facility.
Thank you. And my last point, I've been very quick on this. Years ago, we used to have a series of Black Marias, for want of a better description, multi-celled vans, police vans, where you could hold people if they're causing a fray, you could give them the caution when they settle down and let them go, and also you could hold people and take them all to a custody centre in one go. Is this still happening or not?
Not in Exmouth, because there's no requirement for it. It's not that bad here. We do not get that level
so
of
so things have improved from what they used to be.
Yeah.
Well, that's good news.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Brighton, please. It's fine.
Yes, one thing that's on people's minds, particularly these days, is terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
Now, terrorists like large crowds. We're getting increasing numbers of events in this town that are attracting large and large crowds. We also have a CCTV system in the town centre. It would be wise, I think, to have that carefully monitored when we have a large event on. Would you have enough manpower or lady power to cover that those sort of events? Also, we tend to get the events on the beach, and we all know about terrorism that's happened on beaches. You do have mobile CCTV vans. Would it be possible when we have a major event for one of those to be deployed? Terrorism strikes anywhere, and none of us can feel 1,000% safe. But CCTV probably gives the best evidence of things. Have you got enough manpower to to carefully monitor the CCTV things when they're coming in, when we've got a particular event coming on?
Initial answer, no. We haven't got enough police officers to do that. They all have to be out doing other things. We don't have any mobile CCTV vans in the force.
You did have one?
Years ago, not in my
time
here, yeah. So, I mean, as regards terrorism, or in fact, actually disorder public events, slightly different things, but sort of maybe have an element of the same response, is we work off mainly off intel, which intelligence picture, which informs us how to use our resources. So, yeah, we have because of the current security threat at the moment, the current climate, we have a sort of standing response, if you like. But over and above that, as regards a specific event, each specific event is risk assessed for the threat, either as terrorist threat or disorder threat, and the appropriate response is put into place. And that means we can prioritise the resources accordingly. None of the events in this area, to my knowledge, have been risk assessed as anything other than low. Obviously, that's an ever-changing picture. Other than going into sort of complete lockdown, we have to work on a risk assess intel-led basis, and that's how we operate. So as regards the CCTV, it's run by volunteers, as you're aware, currently, and there's work going on around that to look at alternative provision for that that's maybe less dependent on it being monitored by a specific group of people. There are IT solutions to that. But you're right, CCTV is a really valuable tool and one that we, fully support and do use appropriately. But just to give you some reassurance, where there are public events in this area, each one does go through a thorough risk assessment process and gets the appropriate policing response.
Thank you very much. Fred Cagle, please.
Thank you. My name is Fred King, I'm a ward councillor for Holston Ward. I wanted to talk to you about an issue which I think is quite prevalent in Exmouth. It's got worse over the years. I'm going to start by bringing up the fact that I spoke to one of my fellow councillors on the LAG group to bring it to that particular meeting. And it was the offence of parking on the pavement in Field Park.
Mm-hmm.
I was told that from the result of that meeting that it was not enforceable. Is that correct?
Police don't enforce or regulate parking other than obstruction offences.
Right, okay. Well, done a bit of research, and Section 192 of Road Traffic Act 1988 sets down that a road needs any highway and any other roads which the public have access. Field Park Road and the footpath, the road and the footpath make up a highway. Now I've had representation of constituents in disabled wheelchairs, new mothers with babies in prams, who have nearly been taken out by other cars driving on the road when they've actually had to go on the road because cars are parked on the pavement. Now, it's not just Field Park, it's all over the town. It's pandemic. And no one seems to be doing anything about it, least of all police officers. And I've seen police officers actually park on pavements themselves, and I've seen them not even take any action when they've seen lorries parking on pavements. Now, it's not just the parking element that causes the obstruction to either people that are disabled or partially sighted, or children and families with prams, it's the damage that these lorries cause, which also has a knock-on effect to the public purse. So when are we going to see some action with regard to all the vehicles that park on public pavements?
I'll be totally honest with you, you're not going to see a great deal of action about that from us, mainly because we don't have the resources to address it in its entirety, and we have other priorities that our resources are put to. As regards obstruction of the highway, we'd respond if someone parked totally across Wall Street, meaning the traffic couldn't move in either direction. If it just makes it a little bit awkward or annoying, that's not an obstruction of the highway. So we'd have to prevent
you're saying a vehicle parked on the pavement is not an obstruction?
Not for us to enforce, no.
Well, I beg to differ, because I have, like I said, done my research. I spoke to three retired policemen, two of them ex-traffic cops.
Yes.
They've all told me that it is an obstruction.
I'm not disputing the legality of it, but all I'm saying is I don't have the capacity or resources to police that, I'm afraid.
So what
we're looking for, because enforcement is only one part of regulating behaviour. So I think, I mean, certainly we've got to be a park. I know Steve and I have spoken to it. There's probably a design solution out there. So actually, if the parking was provided or regulated in some other way other than a police officer putting a ticket on, that would be the best solution.
With the great respect, there is adequate parking at the top of the park. There is a car park.
Mm-hmm.
There is adequate parking at the top of the car park. Most of these people are dog owners, not a dog owner in the centre. They can't be bothered to drive up to the top of the park and then walk down into the park. And I consider the fact that they're obstructing the pathway is very inconsiderate to people with partial sight, disabled.
I'm not disputing that, you know, and people do, you know, there's all manner of behaviour and parking and all sorts of issues and where people put wheelie bins and all sorts of things, you know, people coexisting, you know, as neighbours and so on, that are not great. But with my number of police officers and the demand upon us, that is not something that I can put resources to at this moment in time.
So any parking or payments in town is not something you're going to look at?
Not directly. If at any moment in time an incident occurs and parking on the pavement is a contributing factor, that's something we would take into account. But it's not something that we will be putting police resources to at this moment.
I have photographic evidence of vehicles completely parking on pavements, so that people then have to walk into the road, put themselves in danger of moving traffic because someone is selfishly parked. And likewise, I've also seen your own officers. So where do we go from here? Nowhere.
Like I said, I'd be totally honest with you, with all the other demand placed upon us at the moment. We've just talked about terrorism, we've talked about child sexual exploitation, we've talked about children missing from home, vulnerable children, sexual abuse. Parking on pavements is something I'm going to have to push back to the community and say, if you don't like it, don't do it, and tell people you don't like it and don't do it, but don't look to the police and enforce it day in, day out.
Well, I think we do, because the police have only hired a public first. And it is part of the remit of the police to enforce the law. If it's against the law, then it should be enforced. Regardless of what else is in the mix, it's part of the court.
I'll take your point on board, but that's just my honest response.
Can I ask one other question? The Governor Call website, I looked at the website to look up the neighbourhood policing teams.
Mm-hmm.
Now I see for each of the wards in Exmouth there is a picture of a superintendent, a sergeant and a PC, a woman PC, and varying PCSOs on each of the wards. Is that the makeup of the current neighbourhood policing team?
So the current neighbourhood policing team is myself. My photo's not on the website, I don't know why. The superintendent's got her photo on there and I've been bumped up, I think.
So
it's myself at Exmouth, this is for neighbourhood policing. I have a neighbourhood sergeant who covers Exmouth and Ottery, and I have two neighbourhood beat officers at Exmouth and six full-time equivalent PCSOs, and then at Ottery I have another neighbourhood beat manager and three PCSOs.
Yeah, I was just looking at the Exmouth wards.
Just
the
Exmouth, yeah.
And it obviously is not accurate or correct, and when perhaps you could get it chased up.
Yeah, the websites, we're always updating the websites. In fact, one of my PCSOs has just taken that on as a project.
Appreciate
make sure that
it
is kept.
That's where we go to look for our information.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mr. Sorrell, please.
Thank you. Just very quickly, my colleague Councillor Nash can't be with us tonight, and I know that he was working on a lag project with you, and I received some feedback from constituent members of the public about the speed watch programme against the boy racing. I know you just told us tonight about enforcement not being, you know, always necessary in terms of what we do, but I wonder if you could give us an update to see if any progress could be made. Thank you so much.
Okay, yeah, so boy racing, speeding on the anti-social drive on the seafront, ongoing issue. Again, we've got three solutions: engineering, enforcement, and education. The engineering's already been done with the traffic calming, that's done before my time. So we're left with education and enforcement. We've got an ongoing programme of education. around that, and we look at sort of the risk around antisocial driving. We've got a couple of projects around that that the fire service are a really good co-partner with us on that. And then we've got enforcement. So it's one of those things, we know it goes on, but when we're there it doesn't go on, funnily enough. And most of our enforcement powers are based on officer scene, so we have to see it, we can't act on third party information. And so we've been looking at other solutions, and we're going to look at developing, and this is in response to some other issues as well, community speed watch. It already exists in other neighbourhoods. We've got one in Fort Knoll, East Bunbury's got one, they've got one in West Hill. We just want one speed watch for Exmouth and maybe half a dozen locations that they can be active on, rather than half a dozen different speed watches. So it's volunteer-led, with support from the police, and we're working at the moment, in fact, Kev McLeod is leading on this, identifying suitable sites, one of which may be the seafront, but the sites need to be assessed. First of all, there needs to be a problem. If there's no speeding, we can't do community speed watch there. We can't do it just because it's like your road and you want to do it. There has got to be a problem. And also, it's got to be suitable. If you've got people stood by the side of the road, they've got to be safe, they've got to be able to set up, and so on and so forth. So people might want to do it in a certain location, but actually they can't because there isn't a problem, it's not suitable. So that's currently in development, so hopefully that will have, hopefully we'll get some good sites identified where it can be effective. But over and above that, we're sort of constantly looking at ways that we can address or reduce the incidence of the antisocial driving on the seafront. And often the perception is worse than the reality, but we're still looking at that. We've got like a database of sort of repeat offenders, if you like, that are on our radar, and it's one of the most heavily patrolled areas in the town, so you know that's hopefully going to keep it down as well. It does happen, I do get that, and the impact it has on the residents as well. So it's something that is on our radar, certainly at this time of year.
Thank you, that's very, very helpful.
Tim Duncan, please. Before we go to Tim, if someone on that one. Whilst we're talking on this, the training for the volunteers, and when is it likely to start?
It's a little bit of a long-winded process, to be perfectly honest with you, because there's a vetting issue. But once once the volunteers have been identified, vetted, and sort of signed up, if you like, it should be pretty quick from there on in. And then they're up and running, and it's down to them to go out and do it as often as they see fit.
Have you got a list yet?
Of
volunteers?
No, Bill was waiting for Bill to come back to us on that. He was looking at getting interest together on that.
Thank you. Yeah. Tim Duncan, please.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. Could I just put another obstruction issue into the ballpark, which is there's a couple of back lanes in particular in the Colony area which people always park across. Now, it does worry me that, you know, emergency services, etc., needing to access those lanes would find a particular problem. I mean, I think people have been spoken to about it, but it continues to happen. You know,
it's just that, you know, it is in Exmouth. You haven't got enough off-street parking for everyone's vehicles.
Sure, yes.
And you know, there are pockets where it is more of an issue than others, and you know, it bubbles up periodically, and we have a go see what we can do. But I do have to be honest, it is one of those things that we are pushing back to the individuals to say, you know, sort it out. You've got to coexist as neighbours. You've got to live together in the community.
We do, of course, through other avenues like planning, trying and restrict the number of housing occupation flats, etc. Try and restrict vehicle numbers.
And we do work with the county council and the local council to look at other solutions. You know, so we're always having ongoing discussions about, you know, should we yellow line certain areas and so on. So sometimes I feel there are solutions out there. It's not all about slapping tickets on.
Sure.
can answer part of that for you as well, Tim. Myself, Richard, and the deputy leader of Devon County Council will be driving around the colonies and other areas in the town on Wednesday, and on Friday I'm going round with the Devon County Highways officer also to look at sites. So I can come back to you with an answer the next meeting.
Do you want any assistance with that process, Chair?
No, thank you. I've got, no disrespect, I've got 28 areas to look at the moment, but I'll come back to you with an answer at the next meeting. Then, in the future, we can go around again if that's okay with you, yourself.
Right, Dale, please.
Thank you. Slightly different approach. Aside from being, you know, vigilant local residents and in our role as councillors on various groups and this and the other, is there anything more that Exmouth Town Council, and we've got district and county council, is there anything more as a council that we can do to support you? You may say no, it's fine as it is, but is there anything, have you any great ideas of how we could perhaps help further? And if you did, how would we be able to take those forward? Because, you know, in many ways, we're apart from being residents and engaging on the groups, we haven't got much as a council that we can add to this process. I'm just wondering if you have any ideas of what we could do.
It's sort of support across the board, if you like. So a lot of our demand at the moment comes from gap filling around other public sectors that have felt the same contraction in service that we have as well. So it's anything really where the face of the public service is retreating. Because any sort of presence of additional public sector support within the area is key. And in fact, Exmouth, actually, out of the wider district, is probably better served with public services than in some of the more isolated communities. So that's all good. I mean, we'll always take any support we can around sort of. So it's fighting our call, and it sounds a bit lame, but you know, if there are any sort of discussions that are around the sort of policing of or service provision within the area, then you know, we won't take that as criticism of our current ability to deliver. But we'll look at that as a positive sort of moving forward. And then really, I think you sort of touched on it just now about planning decisions. Make it seem like you're just making a planning decision about whether something gets built or not, but that that does have, especially the bigger things, impact for us and others. So is a lot of the issues we deal with, a lot of our time is taking up with basically refereeing between people who are sharing space. And that's a bit of a generalisation, but there's lots of maybe disputes and stuff like that, and really the solution, people come to us because for whatever reason, sort of crisis resolution, but ultimately the solution sits within the people who are involved. And so it's really any input that you have into those sort of situations, either personally or as an organisation, to either support them in finding a solution or sort of thinking outside the box as to what can be achieved. And we've seen it happen. And sometimes it can be just something like redesigning a footpath away from someone's back garden, or something like that. But I suppose it's, and that is what we try to do mainly, is to work in partnership, look at problems, see how we can solve it, and find the people to help solve it, rather than it just being sort of what tends to happen is people come to the police, it's your problem now, it's your problem. In fact, we can only find the solution or help other people to find the solution, because actually once we're involved, sometimes our way of dealing with things isn't ultimately what people want. They don't want to be arrested, they don't want to be taken to court, they don't want fines. But it's got to that stage. So if it can be anything, any input before it has to go to that stage is preferable, certainly for the lower level issues.
And finally, Steve Gazzo, please.
There is a problem, and we have discussed. mean, I'm just wondering what all, now I'm looking at our new county reps, what county can do about it, because surely if you've got one part of non-payment, that is an issue for enforcement officers. And that would, I mean, I can understand what you're saying, Inspector, about that it may appear to be low down on the radar, and I can understand the reason why you say that. But there are other agencies, surely, that can pick that up, and I'm just wondering whether the county can look at that. If there are enforcement officers that are walking around the town.
Mm-hmm. Let me just say one point on that is we had this problem up Hullam Road, which is why we've now got Bollard, which is a redesign, which is, you know, we've got those little Bollard things opposite the shop in Hullam Road, so that they now don't park on the pavement, they can't park on the pavement, which is an issue that I did discuss with Councillor Trail, because that was the same thing, you know, that stopped it, because we actually put those little bollards up so they can't park on the pavement.
Again,
that is a design which is similar to what you were saying.
Yeah, but again, that's coming up on Wednesday when we...
No, it's just illustrating.
Yeah, good point then.
Right, thank you very much, Inspector, for engaging with us on PC Matters. And on behalf of councillors, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Okay. Can we now return to the agenda, councillors? Apologies for absence, please.
We've got apologies from Councillor Bill Nash, Councillor Tony Hill, Councillor Maddie Chapman and Councillor Claire Goff.
Thank you very much. Now we go into public forum. I know, Eileen, you'd like to have a word, I think.
Where do I speak from?
Anywhere there.
Regarding council plans.
Oh, come on, where Antonio was. Sorry.
Camden Downs on the seafront. I'm pleased to see this on the agenda tonight because it's a long ongoing issue.
Can I declare an interest before you start? You're a long time,
so
I've got one. Can I declare an interest on that? Sorry.
I'm sure you don't park on the seafront.
No, I don't think I'm really listening.
It was raised, I think, 2007 in June, and it was Councillor Brenda Taylor who raised it at the Hattop Highways and Traffic Orders Committee of the County Council. Then it was identified that there were 24 hours parking, which encouraged parking away from the campsites, official campsites. And it was also noted that there was parking in Mayor Road, which was free on the road. And so it was then going to be, the charging was going to be £5 for parking on Mayor Road 24 hours. Well, I mean, that is very cheap when you consider what the rugby club were charging, and it was about £20 a night. And also, later on, in 2011, the subject was raised again for an update at the Hatto. And officers were concerned that they were taking up, some of them, two spaces. I'm just giving you this as a background before my question. And they were staying overnight for weeks at a time, which caused public health issues and possibility of providing areas for the campervans to park, campsites in other words. And of course, if they can park on the highway for minimal charge, that's what they will do. It was resolved there that the officers would review the current charges for on-road long-stay parking in coastal towns, and at that time they could park 24 hours with no return for 24 hours. Well, that was being abused quite clearly. And I know that at the last year, during a major event in the town, there were 80 that I counted to length of the seafront. It's nothing unusual. those numbers there. What I'm going to ask for is a review, a study to be made, and I'm pleased to see that all three councils will be setting up a task group, assuming it's agreed this evening, that a survey be commissioned, because, and this can be done, it could be done by members even, because there are doubts as to the benefits that camper vans actually bring to the town. I know of someone, I don't know them personally, I've met them once, I think, and this person used to lecture in tourism, and she said that the camper vans bring absolutely no economic benefits to the towns. They come in with everything on board, they leave a lot of waste behind. There are, I know, stories, reports that effluent has been, on waste has been emptied into public drains. Now, there should be a full study of this, in my view, and this came up at the district council a few years ago when consideration was being given to Mero car park being allocated as a campsite for limited periods. Now, that was never taken forward, and I did ask at that meeting, I think it was a cabinet meeting there, and whether any study had ever been undertaken based on recommendation, and the answer was, well, no study ever has been undertaken. So I think a serious piece of work needs to be done. It could even be used as, you know, I've been involved in task groups at district council, at county council, and other things, and sometimes recommendations from those task groups can be used as an exemplar in other parts of the country, and we can all learn from each other in other parts of the country. So that's what I'm asking for. One is that a study be undertaken, and that when you're considering within your task group the parking issues, side on parking, those camper vans can take two or more spaces, and yet they will be paying one parking fee. And the echelon parking, as we know, they can overhang the pavement. There's also the issue of safety with cooking fires, and there have been fires in these vans, and the problem of waste disposal, all sorts of waste. So I'm really pleased that this has come on, because we've been batting our heads against brick wall at County Council. There have been numerous emails, exchanges between residents and officers, and nothing has moved forward in all these years. And I hope that this town council will get to grips with the other local authorities in an attempt to resolve the concerns of both residents and visitors, and maybe these visitors, and there are people locally who we know live. I know of one clergyman in the county, in East End actually, who lives in the camper van. So it is an issue. They don't pay council tax. We're paying for the disposal of their waste through our council tax. So I hope that all these things, I'm sure they will be considered by all three authorities working together, and that there will be a sensible resolution. I think it's you're kick-starting this again, so it is within your gift to bring something about. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Arlene. Arlene, it is on our agenda, as you know. Thanks very much. Do we have any other people from the public gallery wish to speak? No. Thank you. To confirm and sign as a correct record the minutes of the meeting of the Town Council held on the 15th of May 2017. Could I have a proposal, please? Thank you, Councillor Thank you very much. Matters arising from those minutes. Page 1. Page 2. Sorry, 1, 3, 4. 1, 3, 5. 1, 3, 6. 1, 3, 7. 1, 3, 8. 1, 3, 9. Everybody's happy with that. Thank you very much. Declarations of pecuniary interest and dispensations. Members need to make any declaration of their interests. Thank you. Pauline on campervans.
Yeah.
Thank you. Urgent business to discuss, consider any items which, in the opinion of the chairman, should be dealt with as a matter of urgency. I've got one item which, because of its commercial sensitivity, I'll take in part two. To resolve that the press and public be.
Chairman,
sorry?
Should it be mentioned the issue of the travellers and the Mare Road car park?
No, it's not on our agenda.
Right, okay.
Thank you. To resolve that the press and public be excluded from the meeting during the consideration of items in part two of the agenda, we shall be requesting that at the appropriate time in the meeting. Questions under Standing Order 10? There are none. To consider reports and minutes of committees, working parties, other local bodies, and town clerk, town manager as appropriate. The Planning Committee, please.
I propose acceptance of the minutes of the meeting held on the 27th of March 2017, 10th of April, 24th of April 2017, and the 8th of May 2017. And I only want to make a short statement because some councillors have asked about the planning meeting that was cancelled due to the power cut. And I just really want to say that we did circulate all members of the planning committee with the items that were on that agenda, asked for their comments, particularly for those items that we had to respond to East Devon District Council before the date of the next planning meeting. And they were put forward to East Devon District Council and they will be ratified at the next planning meeting, which is next Monday, the 19th of June 2017. Thank you. I so move.
Thank you very much. Seconder, please. Thank you, Tim. All in favour? Thank you. The Town Clerk's report, please.
Town Clerk's report has been circulated by email on Friday. I think it's self-explanatory. I've mentioned the planting that's being undertaken throughout the town as part of our public realm. Updates on the town team and the dinosaur trail. The success of Exmouth Festival, for which we will be having a wash-up meeting and full report will come to Council in due course. An update on street trading licensing, which I understand is going to East Devon District Council's licensing committee imminently, and for which there are implications for Town Council events going forward, and CCTV, for which I will be convening a working party of the CCTV in due course to update members on all matters, and particularly the aspects that Inspector Weeks has touched on with volunteer numbers, etc. Has anybody got any questions?
Yes, but in the last paragraph, it says likely time of asset transfer from the GDC for the CCTV cameras.
So we've budgeted to take it over in this financial year. So we've incorporated the full revenue costs within the current financial year. But because of the discussions that the CCTV group, which comprises the police, the current owners, East Devon District Council, and myself as the Town Council representative with the Police and Crime Commissioner's Office, and this potential that we might be able to buy into a central hub, there is a suggestion that as part of that scoping exercise, we have the current CCTV equipment in the town audited as part of the PCC's project. And I think from a town council's point of view, that would then give us the reassurance or the information to negotiate the asset transfer in a sensible manner from East Devon District Council. So there's no specific time frame other than that we have budgeted to take it over in the current financial year. My gut feeling is that it will probably be towards the end of the financial year, and by that stage I would hope we would have some clarity on what's happening with the Police and Crime Commissioner's plans, and the full audit will have been done. East Devon District Council have said that they have a small amount of money which they would be willing to do any necessary repairs and upgrades before they hand it over to us. So I'll be seeking that reassurance that the CCTV, as we take it over, is in a sound state.
So when you said the budget before, the sort of capital committees, I did state that I did not believe we should budget in to take the CCTV operation over town council. And also, as part of the devolution conversations with Mark Williams, he has stated on a number of occasions that if it's to be a asset transfers, it's pound for pound. So if we're transferring to the town council £30,000 of costs, we should also be transferring £30,000 of earnings. So it's always worked the same way. So when we say the like of transfer, we're actually saying it's already been agreed.
No, it hasn't already been agreed. It's already been budgeted on the basis that I think the council is anticipating that we will be put in a position where we have to take it over. Now, whether we can negotiate an income generating asset at the same time remains to be seen. There's nothing on the table at the moment. Well, I think the district council's stance is that CCTV is a non-statutory responsibility, and so with the budget constraints that they're facing, they're focusing on statutory responsibilities, and CCTV is not a statutory responsibility. So that's where the pressure in the devolution context is coming onto the town council to take that asset over. And it is a cost-bearing asset, it's not an income-generating asset. I'll convene a meeting of the CCTV working party, and I can bring the CCTV working party up to date. All I can say is at this moment in time, there is an audit being planned to scope out the condition of the equipment as it is, and the discussions at the moment are in the context of the longer term strategic plan for CCTV, not specifically the town council's, you know, inheritance, if you like, of that asset.
So the point you just made is important, and that's like technology, not legacy technology. So it's of no use if it's no good. But the second point is I would be expecting and asking our district councils to go back to the district council and argue that the point works in both directions. So when we've asked in the past for assets, we've been told they're going to take costs on, which is fine. So it works in the other direction. You want to transfer costs, you need to transfer assets and earnings. It has to be cost neutral.
But I would say, I absolutely get that. I get it. But I would say that, you know, in the same way the clock tower was transferred over as an asset transfer, the seafront festoon lights were transferred over as asset transfers from the district council to the town council. There was no corresponding income generating asset at that time. And if the district council turns around and says that they're not in a position to support CCTV financially going forward, the options available to the town council will be either that you take it on and you bear the revenue costs associated with that, or we lose it. That's you know.
And again, just come back one last point. I don't disagree with that principle, but as I keep arguing, these three authorities are responsible in excellence and have to work together. The dumping is not cooperation, it's not working together. So the district council can have a plan, but it needs to ask and it needs to cost it. So it benefits the town, not that it's an extra cost. So I didn't vote and ask for an increase in council tax this year so that we get a non-paying asset. I voted and asked for an increase in council tax so that we can try and generate economic growth in Exmouth. That doesn't do it, in my view.
Fred Cagill, please.
Thank you. Yeah, members of the council were put onto this CCTV working group, and I was going to ask when are those members of the working group going to come into play in the discussion about this particular subject?
So I will be convening a meeting of the CCTV working party, Fred, imminently. I haven't had time to do it, in all honesty. I've attended a few meetings with the Police and Crime Commissioner and with the police as an adjunct to the LAG meetings, but I haven't had time to convene a CCTV working meeting. It's been fairly low down on my priority list in terms of other, you know, more pressing things that I've had to deal with. But I will organise one imminently, and then I can bring you up to speed with everything, you know, the bigger picture of what's happening. And then I think at that appropriate time you can take on board Councillor Scott's comments.
Jeff Trail then, please.
Street trading licensing. It says there are implications for town council events which will offer trading, pitches, e.g. Christmas cracker, muscle festival, Xmas festival, and we will need to respond accordingly. Can I ask, what are the implications?
So my understanding is that there will be a licence fee associated with street licensing. So I'm not sure quite how that's going to work, whether it's per stall or per trader or per event, but there will be financial implications for any organisation that's hosting an event where there is trading taking part on land in the town. Now, you think through the festival where we had 20 to 30 stalls, we will have to get our heads around the licensing implications for those trading activities as part of the festival or as part of the cracker. But until the legislation is ratified, and it's still going through due process at East Devon District Council, I don't know exactly how it's going to work and what the charges will be. That's just the early indication that I've been given.
So those charges that come through, then we're going to have to push those charges on to those people attending?
Yes, potentially. Yeah.
And second point is on the public realm with regards to Derek Parsons resuming watering duties.
Yeah.
That will reduce the council's capacity to undertake weeding throughout the town.
Yes.
We've got a major problem throughout the town with weeding at the moment. Are we anywhere close to another person to work with Derek?
Not at the moment, no.
Well, and what about the two lads that are working with Derek?
We have one. Derek is working 22 and a half hours a week, so during the watering season, the whole 22 and a half hours are taken up with watering, and Stephen works 22 and a half hours a week, so Stephen's deployed on weeding, and Derek is doing the watering.
Do we?
Can I ask that we bring this up at the next
yes.
HR group meeting rather than discussing it in detail at this meeting?
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
Pauline, please. Pauline, stop.
I was just going to say, in reply to Richard with the East Devon councillors, actually, I go to the asset management meeting where this CTV was first brought up, and then it came up. Then I asked Alton from Mendes, whatever the name is, about it, and that's how we got. They said that we could join their hub. So in actual fact, Jill and myself have been fighting for the CTV to stay with East Devon for ages because they wanted to do away with it. And so far as that's concerned, at the moment we've got a finger on the pulse and we're just waiting until it comes up at the next asset management meeting. Also, the street trading thing hasn't gone through yet because I haven't seen it come up on any knowledge, and if it does come up, there is a chance that we can call it in. There's enough of us here to call it in to stop it actually happening. But I haven't actually seen it come up on any of the knowledges yet. And it should come up on the knowledge so that we have notification of it.
Jerry Nicholas, please.
On Wednesday, we've got an all-day licensing training day. And it was my intention, and probably Maggie's as well, to bring it up there and say, what are you going to do about it?
Mm.
And what can we do to stop it? Because, in effect, if we're looking at it correctly, the police has worked it out as well. A lot of the store holders will have to pay two fees.
Mm.
And that doesn't sound right to me in any way.
Thank you very much.
The cash cow was shut.
Could we have, oh, sorry, Brian?
Just one question, really. What the town clerk was saying, that this will not be funded because it's not a statutory obligation. Does that mean then, perhaps Councillor Williamson will answer this one, that East Devon will not pay for anything but its statutory obligations, or are we going down that road very rapidly?
Considering the
austerity
regime that we still live under, I can't answer it. I can't answer it. I can only answer as chair of audit. But no, that is certainly not a principle on which we're operating. Otherwise, there are a whole range of non statutory functions. For example, countryside services, our arts strategy, which would disappear completely. No, that is certainly, emphatically, not a policy underlying the vision of East Devon District Council. Will continue to serve the residents of East Devon funding both statutory and non-statutory provision. And we review that on an annual basis.
Can I just say that where CCT is different though, Councillor Toy, is that the District Council does not fund CCTV across the district.
Right.
It only funds it in Exmouth. I think Exmouth might be the only town.
Seaton and Honiton.
Doesn't do it in Honiton.
Does it in Seaton?
It might do it in Seaton, I'm not sure, but it's not a district wide provision, and that's why it's coming under scrutiny as a non statutory service. Because it, you know, it's not even handedly offered across the district. Yep.
Right, can we have a proposal for acceptance of the town clerk's report, please? Thank you very much, Steve. Second?
We don't need a proposal second.
Thank you. Jane Nicholas. The notes of the Neighbourhood Plan Steering Group, meeting notes held on the 25th of April 2017. That's for your information. The Eastern Mid Devon Community Safety Partnership, the LAG. Councillor Gazzard, you be able to update us on that? That's what I saw.
Sorry.
Yes, it's probably been covered.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Steve. Culp notes from the meeting held on the 8th of May 2017. Those notes are there for your information. We now go on to item 10 on the agenda, to consider options relating to the large number of camper vans and other vans adapted for sleeping parked on Queen's Drive and on residential roads. Councillor Mark Williamson, please.
Well, Chairman, in the interest of brevity, I'm actually going to talk to some notes, which I think might assist us all. And I'm grateful for Councillor Ali Rag, actually, because she's painted in the background for this. The issue of camper vans in Exeter is not new. Quite appear new, but it's not. It was raised on the doorstep 10 years ago when I was first elected, and emails, letters and phone calls have continued at a steady pace. 5 years ago, as Councillor Rag mentioned, the proposal to mark out the underused Mare Road car park with wider bays, electricity hookup, water and sluicing actually reached cabinet, but for a range of reasons it was shelved. I have to say, at the time when our car park revenue was actually declining quite seriously. Since then, the number of camper vans parked on Queen's Drive and on residential roads has increased exponentially, thanks to social media, it is alleged. Whereas 5 years ago we were talking about 20 to 30, and I remember talking about 20 to 30, we're now talking about 60 and 70, and I think 85 was mentioned tonight. Now, this was raised on the doorstep, certainly in Littleham, in the county campaign. It was mentioned more times than austerity and Brexit. Since the Journal's report I've received to date, I've written here down here 36, about 39 emails, letters and phone calls, including some photographs which I received earlier this evening. all calling for the council to resolve what residents see as a problem. Three communications stand out. Could add to this innumerably, but I won't. Just pick out three. First, a phone call last Sunday from an elderly couple who just wanted to park for an hour by their seat. Their seat is this. Their ex-mobiles. The wife was in tears. Almost every bay on Queen's Drive was occupied by a campervan. Another phone call from a couple who rent one of the chalets above Foxhole's car park. They pay £500 a year for a view of the rear of campervans. A ribbon of light was how they described it. Some of you were at COP, and I can't remember who it was on COP who said that when they were out at sea the other day, they looked back on Queen's Drive and they thought there was a new building. It wasn't a new building. It was a row of end-to-end campervans. The couple above the, with the chalet above the Foxhills car park were among several, and I have to say, and I regret to say this, but it's growing in number day by day. They were among the several who said they had seen brown waste, including paper, poured into road gullies and onto the beach. And I have photographs here that I only saw this evening that testify from another source. Environmental Health have issued one penalty notice for such behaviour, but obviously evidence is difficult to get. And finally, thirdly, and rather tellingly I felt, in fact, it's quite a moving letter that was posted to me, by a campervan owner who lives in a flat, but their management company forbids him from parking his campervan in his parking area. He admits to parking on residential roads. He knows residents don't like it, and he wishes he didn't have to do it. He doesn't want to use a private park because they're all outside Exmouth, and that is his only vehicle. But he would be very willing to buy a season ticket if a facility was provided in the Mayo car park or the Esfield car park. I have to say, I admire his honesty. He said when he was conscious that it was causing a nuisance, he would actually move it to another residential road. Now, I buy that honesty because he's looking for a solution and he's a campervan owner. Mr. Mayor, no one is demonising campervan owners. That is a very important message to get across. But as Councillor Ragg said, this is a long-standing problem and we are elected to solve problems. Not to doubt them. Now we now have all three councils committed to finding a solution, improved facilities for campervan parking, and a seafront open again to ex-Mothians driving normal family cars. Now Lisa has done some research via DALC, and EDDC's Andrew Ennis, who is very much on board, is our car park czar. He's also looking at what other coastal towns are doing. And there will be, over the next couple of days, a leaflet published, because our comms team and our car parks team at East Devon have actually worked on a draft of a leaflet, which will go, as long as we've got the person in power to actually deliver these, and I foolishly perhaps volunteered, certainly little councillors, I can do that. I can't volunteer the rest of you, but I can say little councillors will go out there and deliver these. But it will be a welcome notice to campervan owners. It will say, have you received this welcome notice, which is in fact do's and don'ts for campervan owners, whether they're parked in Queen's Drive or on residential roads. That may be a temporary solution, but East Devon has now recognised that there is an issue. Tonight, we are not doing the work of the working group, and I was proposing as a way forward a working group a short and sharp exercise with portfolio holders from Devon County and cabinet members and key officers from the three councils and ourselves. Now, I think, Chairman, Mr. Mayor, this is a genuinely non-party matter, and I'm grateful for Councillor Ragg's identification of this as an issue, because she goes back many, many years. Be careful, I'll say that. Many years. But like Seafolk Front Lighting, this is about the town that we love. And I commend this motion to set up this working group to council, and I'm happy to propose it, Chairman.
Thank you very much.
I deliberately not asked for a seconder. I'm sure one will emerge.
Jeff?
I would second that proposal, Mark, but as one of your Devon County councillors, I was asked by Richard Scott and also Christine Channon to speak to the police with regards to coming up with a traffic order. A traffic order needs the requirement from a ward councillor, agreement from the town council, and police acceptance. However, I've just got some advice with regards to the last part. All the points that Eileen brought up before, increased camper van safety regarding the closeness of the vans, gas bottles on the highway, waste, seats on the pavement, overhang and taking up extra bays were in the letter that I sent to the police. At the moment, the response is that all vehicles are parked there legally. They have got tax, MOT and insurance. So there's nothing that can be done on that side of things. They've also stated that with regards to the safety and the closeness of the vans, and I think you'll find the vans that are parked up in the Imperial Rugby pitch, they have to be 8 metres apart. That was taken up with the fire authority, and there's no issues there. With regards to the hygiene and the waste, we've already brought that up, and if anybody sees anybody tipping any waste, even a bucket of water or whatever from the sink, that should be reported, and that is an on-the-spot fine through the Environment Agency. Not going to go any further because I can go on and on and on, so I'd like to be a part of your working party, and so would Richard Scott. Mr. Chairman.
Pauline?
Can I suggest that if they're doing this leaflet, would they give the rugby club a lot of leaflets so that they can pass out to all the camper vans that they have there regularly during the summer months? Because the last time they were down here, they had two fields full of them.
Right, we've got a resolution that the Town Council establishes a working group on a task and finish basis involving key officers, members from Devon County Council and East Devon District Council with Town Council representation to resolve the parking issues associated with camper vans and other vans adapted for sleeping. We would suggest probably that the local councillors, town councillors, there should be probably three to represent the views on this. Do we have three?
Can I propose Councillor Bruce Tassaran and Councillor Brian Bailey?
Right, thank you very much.
Two of those.
And Brian Toy, you'd like to?
I did put my hand up to make a point.
Oh, sorry.
We're looking at practical solutions to the problem.
Yep.
Now, you can look at something I can throw into the suggestion box, ban car parking or parking on the seafront. That's rather extreme, but they do it in Bournemouth, so that's a consideration. You can sort out the question of the large mobile ones by putting a height barrier across the road, simple enough, isn't it? We do it across our car parks, we can do it across the road. That's how we let the small ones in, which have been a lot bigger than cars anyway. So that's a fairly simple answer to that particular one. Parking on the roads around the town is another question altogether, because if you start bearing down on camper vans, they're as big as lorries. You might run into the conflict of stopping lorries as well. It's not such a simple
Well,
as I even said, this was brought up in 2007 at the Hattock, and all those suggestions came forward then, but the officers don't seem to do anything about it. They just make excuse after excuse after excuse, and it's brilliant if something will come out of this. For 10 years now, we've been going on and on about it, so best of luck, and I really hope that something will come from it.
John?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I mean, Councillor Mark Williamson has been spoken excellent on this, and we don't want to discourage the camper vans from coming in. It's a movement on that, and many, many people are having these camper vans and going all over the country. It's brilliant for Exmouth, they're coming to Exmouth. But we as a town, we've designated areas for these camper vans to hook up with toilet facilities and showers, and it's not on the sea front.
Thank you. Brian, can you please?
Thank you, Chairman. Regarding remarks that Councillor Taylor has made, I think we'll be in a position to do something about it once the task force is in. But I think I can see six members of Hattock in this room, so we will be in a position of influence when it comes to Hattock. So I think that we could exercise that influence at the appropriate time and get something done, Chairman.
Thank you. Fred, please.
Thank you, Chairman. As someone who's actually hired camper vans and travelled in this country and abroad, I've had first experience of using the camper van. And I think it's a good idea that there is going to be a working party group set up to explore the future of camper vans in Exmouth. But would it not be a good idea to actually talk to some of the camper van owners and perhaps get them involved in the working party so they're part of the problem and they may be able to come up with a solution? It's just an idea.
Thank you. Perhaps the group could look at that.
I've got camper vans. Do you want me to be part?
Would you like to be part of the group, Pauline?
Well, Councillor Bill Nash has actually asked to go on, but I didn't look forward because there were three spaces you said, and I thought it fair that if we asked for two, then perhaps the opposition wanted one.
Now, I'm talking about non-councillors that are actually part of the problem.
Yeah, we're looking at councillors at the moment. Do the other side wish to put forward?
Could I just say something? Some time ago when this all came up, since I was elected, there was a suggestion Mayor Park, because it's underused, could be converted into a thing. Now, one of my closest friends is on the National Council for Campervans and Caravans, and I talked to her about it, and she said that's a brilliant idea. Because then, at that time, they were unsure whether they could carry on using the rugby field. Now, I'm sure that were I to say it was on, I can give you her details, and she would be able to get some of the national councillors. There's quite a few living in the
that, that's all part of it. That's what we're looking at. That's why I didn't go any further. Yeah, that's a good point. Steve, you've been asked if you'd like to put one of your members onto this working party.
I'll ask my members. Would anybody like to volunteer to be on the working party? No?
Okay. Right, thank you. Pauline. So do we have, we've had a proposal, we've had a seconder, all those in favour please. Those against? Thank you very much.
Can I just confirm the membership then? I've got Councillor Bruce Desarum, Councillor Brian Bailey, Councillor Pauline Garbutt, and then Councillor Richard Scott in his capacity as a county councillor, Councillor Jeff Trail in his capacity as a county councillor.
And Christine Channon.
And Councillor Mark Williamson as East Devon District Councillor. And
yes,
Christine Channon.
And Bill.
Oh, Christine Channon.
And Bill. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Right, item 11, councillors. To ratify nominations for town council representatives to sit on the EDDC's Regeneration Programme Board, there are two representatives required. Lynn?
Yeah, I'd like to propose Pauline Stott. This is usually, traditionally, the two representatives have been one from each group. So I would propose Pauline Stott, and Brian Bailey is willing to be substitute for Pauline if she's unable to attend.
Thank you very much.
Normally the second member has been from the group.
Steve, would you like to have anyone from your...
We will, but we haven't decided yet.
Right. Could you let the town clerk know, please, when you have?
You'll need to let me know fairly urgently, because Chris Lane from East Devon District Council is pressing for the name of the nominations so that he can send an agenda out, because there's a meeting soon.
And the second one is EDDC's Arts and Culture Forum. One representative and one substitute required.
I'd like to propose Bruce Tassaram as a representative. We have no nomination for substitute at this stage.
Would you like to propose a substitute as well, Steve?
Yes, we'll let you know in due course.
Thank you very much. Budgetary control and authority to spend. Could I take this as one group item, please, on block?
I'm happy to move those, Chairman.
Thank you, Councillor Mark Williamson. And seconded, Councillor Pauline Stott. Thank you very much. All those in favour? Thank you very much. It's passed. Item 13, to ratify the Town Council's review and statement of internal control attached. Now, this is a legal requirement, and we've got papers to sign here.
No, not for this.
Oh, not for this. No, no.
Not for this.
Sorry.
It just needs to be minuted that you have read and reviewed the statement of internal control for the financial year, bearing in mind that we have had an independent internal audit as well, and the independent internal order looks specifically at the council's internal controls as it relates to our financial transactions. I think it's self-explanatory, unless anybody's got any specific questions or any concerns. The risk assessment is attached as well, which has been updated in light of the Town Council's move to 44 Roll Street and the implications that that's had on various assets, etc. So we need a proposal,
right,
in a second.
Proposal for that, please, Steve.
Yeah.
Steve Gazzard. Seconder? Mark Williamson. Thank you. All in favour? Thank you very much. To consider and approve the Town Council's risk strategy. Can I have a proposal for this one, please? Thank you, Lynn. Seconder? Pauline Stott, thank you. All those in favour? Those against? Carried, thank you. Annual Council Return. To approve section 1-2 of the annual return for the year ending 31st of March. Adoption of the annual accounts 2016-17. That's the income and expenditure accounts and balance sheet. Could we have a proposer for that, please? Lynn, thank you very much.
I'm happy to propose this, but can I also...
Oh.
No, I just also would like to record a vote of thanks to Julie for the work that she's done on behalf of the council in keeping the accounts for the last 12 months, and for all the support she gives us, as well as giving all the queries that I'm sure we inundated with, but I would like to thank her very much and record those thanks in the minutes, please.
Thank you very much. So that's proposed. Seconded, please. Steve, thank you very much. All in favour? Thank you very much.
That's all right, we'll record, that's fine.
Recording, yeah. Acceptance of the internal auditor's report. This again is in the papers. Somebody to propose that, please.
I move acceptance.
Thank you very much. Seconded. Thank you, Brian. Brian Bailey. Annual governance statement. Proposer for that one, please. Well, this is one we've got to read out. We acknowledge, as the members of Exmouth Town Council, our responsibility for ensuring that there is a sound system of internal control, including the preparation of the account statements. We confirm, to the best of our knowledge and belief, with respect to the accounting statements for the year ending 31st of March 2017, that we have agreed all the items 1 to 9. Is it your wish that I should sign this?
Yes.
Agreed.
Agreed, thank you.
So you'll need to sign it first, we can do it afterwards.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
Then we go to the accounting statements. Exmouth Town Council, with the detail 1 to 11 of the accounts for the year ending 31st of March 2016, 31st of March 2017. And I need to confirm that these account statements were approved by this authority. All those in favour, please. Thank you very much. And finally, the asset register.
Earmark reserves, sorry. That's not part of the annual return.
No.
It's been circulated separately. So there's earmarked reserves as at the 31st of March and an updated asset register.
All those.
I was going to say, can we propose acceptance of those?
Yeah. Proposed, seconded. Thank you, Steve. All those in favour? Thank you very much. That's the end of part one of the business. So, public gallery, only one. Thank you, Megan. We'll